my next presentation is an update from the staff and Rebecca.
Rachel.
Rachel.
My sister's Rebecca, actually. Rachel. Called Rebecca, it's fine. Good morning, everyone. What I'm going to do is provide you with a brief update on the activities that the team has been undertaking and what our plans are for the next 12 months as well, looking at the strategy for the next 12 months. So, as I said, look at the areas of focus, the things that we've done over the last 6 months. We will look at the strategy and related activities for the next 12 months. And what I'm going to briefly do is touch on our primary financial statements project. Hans, in his introduction, touched briefly on the best communication theme, which is this idea that the focus of the board over the next 5 years is going to be improving the communication of information and financial statements. An important part of that is, of course, the primary financial statements project that looks at the structure and content of the balance sheet, the income statement, and the statement of cash flows. And linked in with that quite closely is the work on the taxonomy, because clearly the structure and content of those primary financial statements have significant implications for the development of the taxonomy. And indeed, one of the things we're going to think about as we develop the primary financial statements project is how we can make those primary financial statements work well in an electronic reporting format. So we'll talk briefly on that. And some of the discussions that we're going to have later on today will also touch on this primary financial statements project and what we could be potentially looking at as part of the project. Finally, what I'll touch on today is to have a look at the ITCG comments that we've received on the revised terms and conditions and explain what our next steps are going to be in terms of those terms and conditions. So what has the team been up to over the last 6 months? Well, going through the main areas that we've been looking at in terms of content, we have, of course, issued a proposed taxonomy update relating to the amendments to IFRS 4. So this deals with the interaction between IFRS 4 and IFRS 9 and introduces a deferral of IFRS 9 for some entities and what we call an overlay approach for some other entities. That has been published and we'll come on to how we're looking to finalise this a little bit later. We've also started an empirical analysis on common practice for the 2016-2017 project, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail shortly. In terms of technology, we're looking at implementation of the taxonomy package, and that's nearing finalisation. And then finally, as we've already touched on briefly with the discussions with Hans, we have already published and implemented our revised taxonomy due process that requires a significant greater involvement from the board in the development of the taxonomy. Okay, so other areas we've been looking at are around education and supporting material. We have, of course, published a guide to common practice content, which provides additional information on how we develop common practice. We've also published some enhancements to the IFRS taxonomy illustrated. This was something that we discussed with you at a previous ITCG meeting. In terms of adoption and implementation, we're continuing our work on profiles, and the translations team are continuing to translate the IFRS taxonomy, and in particular looking at the Spanish and Hungarian translation. So let's have a look at a little bit more detail at what we're doing in terms of common practice. What we decided for the 2016-2017 common practice project would be to link the common practice review to our post-implementation reviews as standards. Now, a little bit of background on post-implementation reviews. When the board has issued a standard and the standard has been effective for a number of years, what the board will then do will review that standard to see whether the standard is working in accordance with how they intended it to work. So to check whether the standard achieves what we wanted to achieve when we developed the standard. And so we undertake post-implementation reviews on recently effective IFRS standards. The two post-implementation reviews that are coming up shortly are a post-implementation review on IFRS 13, fair value measurement, and IFRS 12, disclosure of interest in other entities. The fair value measurement IFRS includes a significant number of disclosures about fair values and how those fair values are developed. IFRS 12 includes significant disclosures relating to interest in subsidiaries, associates, joint ventures, and joint arrangements. The reason that we've actually linked the common practice work with the post-implementation reviews is that we think that there can be benefits both ways from linking them in this way. We think the common practice review will actually provide important input to the post-implementation review. So by looking at what people are doing in terms of common practice around these standards, that will help inform the board as to whether the disclosures in the standards are actually working in the way in which they had intended them to work. And I think there are also advantages in terms of staffing and ensuring that we're looking at things on a sort of joined up basis between the taxonomy teams and the technical teams undertaking the work on the post-implementation review. We've currently got the work on IFRS 13 underway, so there are 150 financial statements that we're reviewing the disclosures of, and we're looking at dividing those between two industries, financials and the commerce and industry. It's unlikely, unfortunately, that we'll have completed that review in time for the annual IFRS taxonomy in 2017, but as I said, we're still working very hard on those common practice reviews. In December 2016, we're planning to start our empirical analysis on IFRS 12 for the disclosure and interest in other entities. Moving briefly on to the taxonomy packages, we've listened to the feedback that you had, and we've decided to apply the taxonomy 1.0 to the IFRS taxonomy. Publication is planned for early November on those taxonomy packages. IFRS taxonomy and illustrated, as I said, we've discussed this at a previous ITCG meeting where we proposed some improvements to the content and improved navigation of IFRS taxonomy illustrated, and those improvements have now been published and are available on the EIFRS website. We're continuing our work on filing profiles, so this is the project that we've undertaken to get an understanding of how the IFRS taxonomy is being used throughout the world in different jurisdictions. We currently have profiles for 19 countries, and those are published on the IFRS Foundation website and the links shown on the slides. We're working on updates for a number of the existing profiles, and updates on the first batch of profiles, which were originally published in June 2015, will be published shortly. And we're hoping that the second batch of profiles should be published in November 2015 was when the original ones were published. We're hoping the updates will be published shortly after the updates that we have to the original first batch of profiles. We're also seeking to publish a third batch of profiles later this year, and we may look at a phased approach to implementation of those profiles. The reason we're looking at a phased approach, I think, is to enable a more rapid publication of information as and when it becomes available from the work that the team are undertaking. I've already touched on translations. We're continuing to work on translating the IFRS taxonomy, and the latest status of the translations are summarised on slide number 12. So that's a very brief overview of what we've been doing over the last 6 months, and what I'd like to do now is talk about what our plans are and our strategy is for the next 12 months. We have four main pillars to our strategy, and our work is going to focus on meeting those pillars and making sure that we undertake work to ensure that we develop our strategy appropriately. So the first pillar of our strategy is to continue to develop the IFRS taxonomy content in an accurate and timely manner. It's sort of pretty fundamental to what we do. We're also going to be looking at how to improve data quality around the taxonomy. And we're also going to be touching on how to make taxonomy work better within the principle-based approach to reporting that we have in IFRS standards. And then finally, we're going to monitor developments in technology. And we have a session later on today which looks more at how technology can help us going forward. And we're particularly looking and interested in your ideas about how technology could potentially help us. So let's have a look at the content. What are we doing in terms of content of the taxonomy and the planned updates that we've got? Well, it's largely focusing on the area of insurance. So we have at the moment an exposure draft out of proposed taxonomy updates in relation to the amendments to IFRS 4 insurance contracts, and we're hoping to have the final IFRS taxonomy update in quarter four of this year. The really big project, I think, for next year is going to be the insurance contracts project. This is a very major new standard that the board is introducing, and once that is issued, we will need to issue a proposed taxonomy update of the amendments to of the revised insurance contract standard. And the current plan is for that to be updated within the next 6 months. So the proposed taxonomy update would be issued within the next 6 months, in line with when we publish the standard on insurance contracts. We'll be working on. We are in the process of drafting the common practice work that we've already undertaken on agriculture, leisure, retail, and franchising, and we're hoping to get a proposed taxonomy update out in quarter four of this year. We are also planning to issue some proposed IFRS taxonomy update in relation to financial institutions. This has followed on from a review that the staff have done of common practice in relation to financial institutions, where we've identified some enhancements that could be made to the existing common practice. Again, we're hoping to have a proposed IFRS taxonomy update out in quarter four of this year. I've already touched on the common practice updates we're planning to do in relation to IFRS 13 fair value. In terms of timing, it's likely to be after 6 months. Data quality is one of the issues that we hear talked about quite frequently in relation to the taxonomy, and people saying that we need to improve data quality, ensure that information is accurately tagged and error-free, and that a single global taxonomy is necessary for ensuring that we have the data quality that's necessary. What we're planning to do in this area over the next 12 months is look at issuing some additional implementation guidance, which will, I think, mainly be focused on preparers, and I'll go into a little bit more detail on that in the next slide. We're also working quite closely with regulators to look at how we could potentially develop a global framework for good electronic reporting, because we think that one of the key things for ensuring implementation of structured electronic reporting is getting in the buy-in from the regulators and getting them to sign up to some good basic rules about how to go about implementing electronic reporting. I touched on the implementation guidance, and there are a number of areas that we're looking at in terms of improving implementation. So it includes things like improving the existing IFRS taxonomy navigation. We're looking to publish some additional implementation guidance and education materials in this area to help people with the tagging of the IFRS financial statements. We've had some initial discussions with you at a previous ICCG face-to-face meeting, and we'd like to explore ideas about how to develop implementation guidance with you a little bit further at future meetings. We think detailed work on implementation guidance is likely to start during 2017. One thing that we increasingly hear from people commenting on the taxonomy, and I think this is largely from people who perhaps have in the sort of more mainstream financial reporting world, is that they see a conflict between the principle-based financial reporting that we have in IFRS and the need for structured electronic reporting. So this idea that in order for structured electronic reporting, we need much more rules-based accounting standards and much more structure around things like the primary financial statement. And I think one of the things that we're going to try and explore in more detail is whether this concern is actually a valid concern, and whether there are things we can do to try and reconcile this idea of principle-based reporting with the increasing need for structured electronic reporting. Part of what we're going to be doing today is to look at how technology could help perhaps bridge this gap between principled electronic reporting and structured electronic reporting, assuming, of course, that that gap exists. And we'll be looking for ideas from you as to whether, in fact, there is a problem there and what we could be doing to actually solve that problem. So what I'd like to do now briefly is touch on the Primary Financial Statements Project. This is an early stage research project, so we're looking at research into what we could do to improve the structure and content of the primary financial statements. What do we mean by the primary financial statements? Well, we mean the statement of financial performance, so profit or loss and other comprehensive income, the statement of cash flows, the statement of financial position, so in other words, the balance sheet, and the statement of changes in equity. What we've heard mainly from people are concerns around the structure and content of the statement of financial performance. And indeed, when we looked at our agenda consultation that we carried out earlier this year, one of the big focuses of that agenda consultation was the idea that we need to do more around the reporting of financial performance, and that would include improvements to the income statement in order to communicate information about performance more effectively. We've heard fewer concerns about the statement of cash flows and the statement of financial position, but there are some concerns expressed out there, and what we're planning to do as part of the project is explore whether there are any needs to look at the structure and content of the statement of cash flows and the statement of financial position. As part of this project, we're not looking at the statement of changes in equity, but that's not that we're ignoring the statement of changes in equity, it's just simply that the board has a separate project looking at the difference between liabilities and equity, and as part of that project, they will look at the structure and content of the statement of changes in equity. One of the things that we will be addressing is in a way another part of this whole debate about principles-based versus rules, which is this idea of comparability versus flexibility. So we hear from many users concerns about comparability of financial statements, saying that it's very difficult to compare financial statements prepared under IFRS because entities use different line items and subtotals in the primary financial statements and also in the disclosures as well. It's because of this lack of comparability that we see a great demand for the information provided by data aggregators, which look to standardise the information provided and provide comparable subtotals. We also hear people saying that perhaps recognition and measurement needs to be principles-based, but might there not be a need for more structure and rules around the presentation of information? So again, that's another theme that we hear from people around the idea of comparability. Against that, we hear a lot of discussions about flexibility and the fact that people actually like the flexibility that IFRS provides in the structure and content of the primary financial statements. It allows preparers to tell their own story, and we hear a lot of preparers talking along these lines of if we introduce too much structure, that will mean that they are not communicating effectively their own story and what's actually happened to their financial statements. They say that as long as the information is available in the notes, surely the structure and content of the primary financial statements can be however they wish it to be. And as I said, there's general concern that perhaps more structure and content could undermine the principles-based nature of IFRS standards. So it's these tensions that we're going to have to try and resolve as part of the primary financial statements project and looking at different ways of resolving those tensions. Slide 23 illustrates some of the things that we have been looking at. This has been the result of some of the research that we've conducted as part of the Primary Financial Statements Project, and looking at a number of companies to try and identify possible concerns with the structure of the income statement. These companies, A, B, C and D, are all in the same industry. But as you can see, you end up with significantly different subtotals and line items within the income statement. So company A and B are broadly comparable. They have similar types of line items and similar types of subtotals. Company C and D provide much less information on the face of the primary financial statements. They all seem to agree that revenue and operating profit are important numbers, but interestingly, operating profit isn't actually defined by IFRS. So the question is, should we perhaps look at defining IFRS? A number of them produce adjusted operating profit, but if you took this adjusted operating profit and assumed that you could compare that adjusted operating profit between company A and company B, that would be wrong, because people adjust for different things within that adjusted operating profit figure. And indeed, another thing that we found as part of the research that we've been undertaking is that it's not always clear within the disclosures what it is that people have been adjusting that operating profit for. So I think there are some basic things that we could be looking at here. For example, we could be looking at the part of the primary financial statements at defining operating profit. It seems a lot of people use it, so it seems quite strange that we don't have it as something within IFRS. There are significant challenges associated with that, in that how do you actually define operating profit for a broad base of industries? So how do you define operating profit for a bank versus operating profit for a manufacturing company? They're clearly quite different, and perhaps the only solution would be some sort of through the eyes of management type approach. Another thing we could look at doing is looking at adjusted operating profit. Should we think about, if you like, embedding these alternative performance measures into IFRS? One of the advantages of doing that, of course, would be that the information is then audited, and we could also require disclosures around these adjusted operating profits so that people at least know what people are adjusting for, where at the moment it's not always entirely clear what constitutes these adjusted operating profits. And there are lots of other things we could do within those areas in terms of improvements in the primary financial statements project. I talked earlier about the tension that we've got between comparability and flexibility, and clearly there are a whole range of approaches that we could actually take in terms of trying to reconcile those two tensions. So at one extreme, we have something like developing a detailed chart of accounts for the primary financial statements. So going down and mandating a significant number of subtotals and line items within the primary financial statements. At the other extreme, we could just say, well, actually, we agree with this whole idea of entities being able to tell their own stories, and perhaps there are tools to enable sufficient disclosure so that people can find the information they want if they need to. So let's just allow companies to present their financial statements as they like. Now, I suspect that the answer and where we'll end up in the primary financial statements project is somewhere in between those two. So, for example, we could develop a financial statements template and require or encourage preparers to use it. So not going as far as a chart of accounts, but providing more structure and content and requiring that structure and content. Or we could be more targeted in the improvements that we want to make as part of the project, and looking at things like subtotals such as operating profit. We're going to discuss some of these issues in one of our breakout groups later on today. And we'll be very interested in hearing what you think about these issues and whether you think structured electronic reporting can help us resolve these issues, or whether you think actually it causes problems in terms of what we can and can't do within this project. Now, briefly, I'd like to touch on the IFRS taxonomy. On your review of the draft terms and conditions, we presented the draft terms and conditions to you at a conference call earlier in the year. We received comments back from seven of you, providing some comments on some of the clauses within the revised terms and conditions. We are reviewing those comments together with our legal team, and we're also planning to undertake additional outreach activities with regulators to understand whether they have any concerns in relation to these revised terms and conditions. Our aim is to finalise the terms and conditions during quarter four of 2016, so later on this year. The website updates will require a login, but that login will be free, and we'll ask users to accept terms and conditions. And we think that will be implemented for the annual IFRS taxonomy 2017. With that, I will pause and see if anyone has any questions or comments on anything that I've put in this update.
Conditions, I sent a comment, and while waiting for responses, I'd like to ask about the policy about coverage of granted use. Does the foundation intend to cover the entire communication cycle involved in the XBR IFAS communication?
Yes. Basically, we're going to take some of the clauses away and discuss them again. But the aim for the terms and conditions is to allow as much as possible. So the plan is not to restrict use of the taxonomy beyond in a very specific couple of cases where we see use that is harming the comparability of electronic financial statements. So there were a couple of things we specifically wanted to prohibit. However, the way that these things are usually drafted, we end up with a set of clauses that are the things that we wish to prohibit, plus a set of permissions, because for some things, permissions have to be granted. So we do want the permissions to allow pretty much everything within the financial reporting chain that somebody might want to do with the IFRS taxonomy. So we want to allow software vendors to use it, we want to allow regulators to use it, we want to allow preparers to use it in the ways that they're used to using it. So those set of clauses are one of the areas we really did want people to look at if they could, to let us know if they see any problems with what is in there at the moment. Obviously, we've been reviewing it ourselves as well, and when we go back and we discuss the feedback that we've got from various members of the ITCG with our legal department, we'll go through and we'll review them again just to double check. But the aim is that those clauses are pretty permissive. They're not supposed to interfere with any of the standard use of the taxonomy in the financial reporting chain.
And I'm especially concerned about granted use related to service providers. Not just preparers and consumers are the basic stakeholder, but without supporting service providers, XBR project will fail. So I'm concerned about whether, for example, IT application service using the IFRS taxonomy is granted usage.
Certainly the intention is that they should grant any use that service providers require. If you're particularly concerned about this and that, and your reading has suggested that there's a reason for concern, we'll go back and we'll review that again with service providers in mind. But it is intended to allow service providers to work as they work at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Lou, you were... Sure. The primary financial statement project, am I right that that's really completely separate from electronic reporting? I mean, it originated as a topic, am I right, not related to XBRL and electronic reporting?
That's right in that it's a standard setting project, so it's looking at the ultimate output of the primary financial statements project will be an IFRS standard that looks at amending structure and content. But I think what we're trying to emphasise here is that actually, it would be silly of us to look at the structure and content of the primary financial statements without considering how that information is going to be consumed. And of course, that information is going to be consumed using electronic reporting. Yeah. And so we need to think about those issues as we're developing it.
Yeah. Okay. I completely agree with that. It's good to know it's something that started not even related to electronic reporting, because the issues of comparability aren't electronic reporting related. It's the actual reporting itself. The second question I had was the timing of the common practice along with the post-implementation review. I'm concerned about the timing of that if they're together, because the post-implementation review probably comes a couple years, 2 or 3 years after the standard is out. To me, that's too late for the common practice XBRL to be evaluated, because if you wait 2 to 3 years to see what's out there and then change the taxonomy, I mean, by that time everybody has tagged their information for 3 years, whereas if you did the common practice XBRL, you know, 6 months after you start seeing the disclosures, it'd be much more efficient to make those changes then, as opposed to waiting 2 to 3 years. So
I think our reason for waiting 2 to 3 years was to allow, if you like, practice to evolve and bed down. I think what we've tended to find when new standards have come out is that it takes a while for people to, if you like, optimize their disclosures. And we thought that if we rushed at it, we might end up sort of reflecting the immediate sort of knee-jerk reaction to the standard rather than sort of the more considered views on what's required in terms of presentation and disclosure that would develop over time. But clearly, it does have disadvantages to it as well.
Right. There's a balance there. And yeah, I lean toward the do it earlier side of that.
Thanks. I have a question relating to the translation. On which level are the translations performed? Is it on the level of the IFRS taxonomy illustrated, or are the entire files translated with all the content?
So the translations are of the labels, primarily. That includes the entire set of labels provided with the IFRS taxonomy, and the translations are the usual process. This obviously does vary a bit by regulator, but the usual process is that we provide a spreadsheet template which contains the full set of labels from the taxonomy and fields to complete with the translations, and those are sent to the translators. The translators then send us back the set of translations for all those labels, and we generate an XBRL label link base that can sit with the taxonomy so that the translations then exist both in an Excel format and in an XBRL format.
Also in the ITI things, isn't it?
Yeah, we can then, of course, use that to generate an ITI reflecting those translations, because we generate that from the taxonomy files.
Bellu, you were thinking.
It's coming back to the terms and conditions. The question is it going to be prospective? Because a few regulators are already using the IFRS taxonomy. So when one has to accept it, is it on a prospective basis? Or?
It seems quite unlikely to me that we could do that, but it's one of the questions that I've taken for our discussions with legal, because I think, I don't know if it was you, but it has been asked before. So when we do the review of all the feedback we've got with legal, that's one of the questions we will be taking to them.
So, on the IFRS 12, disclosure of interest in other entities, is there any consideration at the level of the board to endorse the LEI, the legal entity identifier, to identify the entities more globally?
We haven't considered that at this moment in time, so I can't ask that question, but this is something that we can consult with our board advice, so no answer for you today.
So this would be looking at common practice as a result of IFRS 12 and seeing that there would be legal entity identifiers.
Yes, there's this project by the FSB that is called Legal Entity Identifier. It's global, it's run by a number of organizations. I think G20 is primarily involved, but other countries are chipping in as well. The Global LEI Foundation is established in Frankfurt, and they assign legal entity identifiers to different entities more globally, so across country borders. Some regulators have already endorsed it. Some European regulators have used it. EBA, IOPA, and ESMA are one of them. The question would be whether the same level of identification would be perhaps useful in order to compare the financial statements, be able to drill down into what is the structure, who is the beneficial owner of a company, and this legal entity identification, I think, might work towards it.
Mika, I think I know the LEI. There are other identifiers in the market. The reason why I can't answer your question today, because first we haven't considered, but there is a question to be asked, are identifiers to identify like companies or securities or industry codes, does that belong within the IFRS taxonomy, or does it belong somewhere else, should someone else take on the responsibility? That is the reason why I can't answer that question to you. That is something that we really have to, I would like to consider first with our board advisors, really. And that's what I agree fully, there's a need for it. I agree fully that investors probably really would like to have a single global identifier globally, but the question is this within the scope of the IFRS Foundation?
It's also quite likely to be one of those issues where we have to look at the regulatory requirements versus our responsibilities and requirements, because at the moment, I think most requirements for identifiers and which identifiers to use is specified by the regulators. So I don't know what impact that would have on IFRS considerations looking at the LEI project and where the responsibilities potentially overlap or not.
And the second, on the again at the level of the board, is there any consideration to bring the content of the IFRS taxonomy as part of the standard or closer to be recognized as part of the IFRS publication, or is it still going to be considered more like a separate artifact that elaborates the disclosures of the standards?
We considered that at the time we did the revision of the IFRS taxonomy due process, like at that time in our first proposal we said should the IFRS proposed taxonomy update be given the status of what we call an accompanying material to the standard. Yeah, so it's really not part of the core standard, but it accompanies, it helps particular users to understand the IFRS taxonomy. We received feedback from it, and the majority of our stakeholders preferred it not to be an accompanying material. Therefore, we decided that it's not part of the standard, it's not an accompanying material. However, it's been published, as you know now, the proposed taxonomy update is published at the same time or nearly at the same time as the final standard. So for those stakeholders who believe there's a benefit to better, in reading the taxonomy to better understand the presentation and disclosure requirements of the standard, they can still do that.
I believe you were up next, Chi.
Yeah. I'm really led to page 23 to the discussion about the third income issue. And we will ask something about this related primary financial relation between primary financial statement project and taxonomy. But I believe that this is a really important point for both of the two issues. And today, I think only one this slide, but this is the why quite the why there's so many common practice and why it's difficult to use the IFRS data for the users. Because if the users rely, starting to tagging on a financial statement, user wants to rely on the tag. But in that case, there's many types of operating profit. So that user can believe the what kind of operating profit this company is disclosing, only taking the tags. But operating profit, as the Rachel said, there's no definition about in IFRS, but in my understanding, IAS 1 requires company to disclose if there is any materiality, company have to disclose subtotal. And today, the company starting to disclose its operating profit. And the problem is, what is operation? Maybe this is not clear, but each company have a different the understanding, what is operating. So that there are many types of operating profit is currently is happening on several companies' financial statements. So in that case, is for example, maybe some regulators starting to think about it. Maybe we should provide several types of tags, operating profit, but not including to the some profit from equity method, some subsidiary under the equity method, or the operating profit, but excluding something like this, the disclosing about the company B or company A. So in that case, again, there's another common practice we'll have. So the discussing about the usability of the IFRS taxonomy, before that, usability of taxonomy, the taxonomy is exactly same as the user usability for using, consuming IFRS data. So in that case, before discussing about the taxonomy, the discussion about taxonomy together, maybe you should better define what is the operating or what is operating profit in standard.
That's what the focus of the Primary Financial Statements project will be. It's looking at whether to make improvements to the structure and content, so it would look at things like introducing additional subtotals, additional required line items, looking at potentially defining things like operating profit or adjusted operating profit. So it is the Primary Financial Statements project is a standard setting project, or ultimately it will be once we get past the research phase. But the reason we're talking about it in the context of electronic reporting here is that we think there is a significant interaction between them, and we need to think about electronic reporting as we're developing the proposals in as part of the Primary Financial Statements project for changes to the standards.
Yeah. So that if you are the primary financial statement project the going on, maybe the IEL taxonomy can reduce the unnecessary common practice if the those new definitions defined. Maybe there is no. In that case, it is currently operating profit. I remember that the profit from operating income as common practice in your IEL taxonomy. But if this definition becomes a standard, maybe there's no longer the common practice. So this is, I think, it's quite good direction to discuss, discussing about this.
Gee, I don't understand what you mean unnecessary common practice. So you, so if we, could you elaborate a little bit more what you mean there? The primary financial statement may result in reducing unnecessary common practice?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to share is why I expected to the primary financial project to improve taxonomy discussion.
Okay.
So because the rule asked to do something about the relation, so that I want to share with other members.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Another question, but taxonomy package 1.0, is it not subject to public consultation? Has technology changed to IFAS taxonomy?
I think, and we just, and Bartek, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't got Fladek here. I think.
John may be able to.
Pardon?
John may be able to add something to.
No, I think we discussed that with the IFRS taxonomy consultative group a couple of months ago. I think at that time we discussed all the attributes and you agreed that they were okay to be included. We also discussed at that time that this is really not, it's not going to be a really significant change to the technology of the IFRS taxonomy. Therefore, it was not open for public consultation because I think people can even ignore, not take that file, if I'm correct. And
it's basically just the addition of an index for the taxonomy. It doesn't change it or affect any of the rest of the content of the taxonomy at all. It's the addition of a file that happens to provide an easier way for software to access the content of the taxonomy.
And I'd like to suggest to publicly clarify the reason behind, the reason why public consultation is skipped.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Willie?
Just a very quick question on the terms and conditions. In some jurisdictions, such as China, we have extended the IFRS taxonomy and used it as a core. One of the items that we are allowed to do under the current terms is make additions to extend material only insofar as it's necessary to create and support additional extension taxonomies. In the broader context of this arrangement, is it envisaged that individual jurisdictions will then have to have a similar terms of condition kind of mirrors and built on top of that, given that sometimes the version of taxonomy that we refer to may not be the most up-to-date one. So I just want to kind of have a view in terms of how this is actually envisaged in the broader adoption of the taxonomy on a global level.
So is this the sorry, I missed the start of this, about the versions of tax, managing different versions of taxonomies at the same time, or is this a concern?
But it's not managing the versions, that in China we have actually upgraded our taxonomy. But there's a time delay.
Yes.
We have been using the 2010 version, and then we just recently, last year, kind of move it up to align with the latest version. But we, as of today, I can't recall, we actually have our own terms and conditions. So it's going to be a kind of a, what structure would that be?
Honestly, I don't know how these things would structure in terms of terms and conditions. I think that's a question for legal departments to say what happens when you have nested terms and conditions. The only answer I can give there is that I know, for example, that our terms and conditions refer to the XBRL International terms and conditions because that's another nested layer of terms and conditions. We did get quite a few queries on the clause in our terms and conditions that has to do with keeping things up to date, so that's going to be one of the things that we discuss, which may affect some of your concerns about the speed with which it's possible to update extensions. So we're going to be discussing that clause again. But the interaction between different sets of terms and conditions, I think, is definitely a question for our legal department and potentially your legal department.
Yeah. And it's also, is it envisaged that individual jurisdictions? I know I recall Malaysia is on the earlier version, but they actually built an IFRS. We certainly do. I seem to recall Russia also is based on IFRS. So in that sense, do you also require the individual jurisdictions to have a similar terms and conditions to mirror their version?
There are some clauses in our terms and conditions that require credit to us and acknowledgement of copyright and so on. But there aren't any requirements for a jurisdiction to then necessarily produce their own terms and conditions.
Because when we do it, our vendors need to load IFRS taxonomy in full, and then our extension. So they actually have that as one layer in a sense. So let us take that offline and think.
Yeah, well, we might have to discuss it more because, as I said, I think it's a kind of discussion that will need our legal department to be involved because it involves the interactions between different documents. So I'm happy to get in contact with you if you want to discuss that more with us as well.
Thanks. Derek, you have.
Yeah, so just a general question from my side. So as you know, one of the big issues of XBRL taxonomy is really the level of usage. So we, on a global level, we don't find many companies really do it on a voluntary basis. So it's really lack of data, which it's really a big issue. So my question would be now for this project, do you plan to early also do test filings and ask really the preparer's view? Because experience is really that you learn a lot when you implement it, maybe more than when you just do it on a theoretical basis, because the devil is in the detail, as you know. So are there intentions to use that and have forums on that and more do exchange with preparers? Thanks.
Yep. Sorry, no. You may know that in the past we had set up a detailed tagging task force where in fact we engage with preparers to use the taxonomy and provide us feedback. Now we also mentioned that we are thinking about looking, do we need to do something more to in the sense of providing additional implementation guidance, and if so, what do we need to do? Now we're starting to have now internal discussions, and one of the ideas that have been floating in the mind of staff but hasn't been discussed yet, and we really need to explore further, the best people to tell us what kind of implementation guidance may be needed is really to work with preparers to give us that information so that our guidance can be focused. So it's possible, it's likely, but again, give us a couple of few more months before we can come back to you on this question.
I actually have one question myself. Rachel. So Enhance's address to us, he spoke to better communication, digital reporting being a subset of that, and pointed the IDG to that area to provide support. And then in your presentation, you laid out your next 12 months of activity, and I'm sure somewhere in there was a tie to better communication, but I couldn't see it myself. Could you explain it for me? That's the piece that didn't quite set for me. That, like, where did the two connect? You're obviously running off for 12 months. The bullets got a pointing in a direction of the next little bit. How did the two join together?
It's the whole idea that electronic reporting facilitates communication. So it is key to the whole better communication theme. The idea that if we make digital reporting more accessible and we make the IFRS taxonomy better and used by more entities, then actually what we're doing is we're providing better communication. So if you like, it's a fundamental pillar of the whole of what we're doing. Now the structure in terms of the strategy over the next 12 months that we were talking about in terms of what we're looking at as part of the taxonomy team is all designed to make sure that the existing taxonomy works well, is implemented well, and provides a good basis for people to do electronic reporting. So the linkage is that electronic reporting is part of communicating effectively and efficiently, which is all the best communication team is about.
Mm. Okay, thank you. Lou?
Real quick, I want to say I'm extremely in favor of the IOSCO efforts, because at some point, if you could even begin to bring regulators to say, here's generally how we want our rules to be set for electronic reporting, that would be favorable to everybody anywhere in the whole chain of electronic reporting. Not a short-term project. I realize it would take a long time to get regulators to even begin to do that, but starting that is it's a wonderful thing. So keep going on that.
Thank you. Just to react on that, I'm Yael. I'm the executive director of the organization, and I'm responsible partly for the relationship with IOSCO, and I completely agree with you. We've invested a lot, as Rachel said, in trying to convince IOSCO to prioritize this topic and to take this as a very important project for the C1 committee, the committee for responsible for disclosure and financial statements. So it would be good if you around the table have contacts with regulators within that group, that voice comes also from you, because we felt that whereas some regulators were very enthusiastic in taking this to the agenda, others were not so interested. So it would be good if they hear it from mm-hmm. their stakeholders directly to understand what's the importance of it. For example, the topics that were raised here, the LEI, the identifier, the issues around adopting different versions of the taxonomy and the problems it creates, those are issues we can have limited success from here. And if it doesn't come from a call from IOSCO on best practice, which is a project we were asking them to take together with us, that would be great. So any influence that you can do for us for this very important topic would be very helpful.
Chung Lu, you have a comment?
Please, go. Thank you. Just one clarification on Chu. What I interpreted what you said is the number of common practices. You are saying if the number of common practices is very small, you are thinking that's a better communication stage. So if we increase the number of base taxonomy, then it will decrease some number of common practices. So you think that's the right direction?
Yeah, this is a very complicated the story. About the operating income issues, it's there's no clear definition in countries, because under the IFRS require company to if there is significant or materiality, you have to disclose. So there are many types of the figure, which is same under same names. But in that case, it's so that the regulator starting to think about it to provide several types of the common practice. Maybe this is also one of the solutions, because there are different means, so that we need the different tags. So, but at the same time, a better comparability and better communication, because investors cannot understand why there are so many types of operating revenues, operating profit. So if the ISB starting to discuss about to provide more clear definition, this is also helpful for a better communications. But at the same time, if really there are many types of the meaning of each depend on the companies, in that case, we need more common practice. So that it depends on what the company wanted to disclose. So most important thing is the investor wanted to share with more clearly what the company wanted to disclose. So the taxonomy have to, my understanding is the taxonomy have to help this communication.
It seems there are two different issues, the number of common practice. Another thing is standardization and storytelling. This is a little different from the perspective of mine. So while you just described as the operating profit as on some example, people are thinking if we just describe this is a kind of operating profit, then there are all the preparers are trying to meet that kind of description of what operating profit is. Sometimes some companies think it is some kind of a gain and losses on equity account investment. They think this is operating profit or loss. Yeah. Some others do not think so because of the nature of their operations, business models, of the, its company. So I'm saying, you know, we cannot say, you know, there is another operating profit that includes some kind of gain and loss of the equity investment. We cannot say that's always true, I'm saying. So if we make a, some kind of standardization of the of this IFRS taxonomy, we cannot say at the time this operating profit, the base of taxonomy, should not include any kind of gain and loss on their equity investment. Just I'm saying is that there's a little subtle difference from the, this kind of standardization, storytelling, and some kind of a common practice at the base taxonomy.
Yeah, I understand. I understand this point. So the, I think, you know, discussion of operating profit is really difficult, but at the same time, it's become a more important indicator now. So the, at the same time, we need to discuss about the, what should be should include. So I think continuing this kind of discussion between the company side and the investor side with ISB must be most important. So I don't say we need to define only one operating profit right now, but we need to more discuss about the, what company this wanted to disclose and what investor needed through this taxonomy discussion. I think it's the best place to discuss about this issue.
Okay. Michael?
One quick question on this better communication approach. The European Commission, the DG FISMA, has recently started a very similar type of project aiming to revamp the entire regulation, level 1, level 2, level 3, across the capital market, banking, insurance. So it's a massive approach. But the one underlying principle there is for the project is that whatever comes from this revamp of taking a look and analyzing the technological impact actually goes up to the level 1, which means they are ready to change the level 1 directives if there is certain input brought from the technological side or from logical or from data structuring. Is the intention of the board with the better communication here also to take it back into the process of establishing the IFRSs, whatever outcome there is from the data structuring activities, from the technological considerations around the IFRSs? Is it going to be brought back to the IFRSs, and is the board considering to be ready to take, let's say, larger steps, if necessary, under consideration for reshaping the IFRSs?
What do you mean by larger steps? I would pass the best communication project would be to revise a number of standards. And the standards that are potentially we would be looking at as part of this project are around IS1, so the general sort of presentation and disclosure requirements. We're looking at revising IS8, which deals with accounting policies. We're looking at potentially revising IS7, which deals with the statement of cash flows. We would also, not as part of the primary financial statements project, but as part of another project which sits under this best communication theme, look to revise some of the disclosure requirements in existing standards, and certainly to look at how we can take a better approach to developing disclosure requirements. And so as far as the sort of standard setting process is concerned, that is a sort of fairly fundamental look at some of the standards that we have out there in terms of presentation and disclosure. In terms of how that interacts with technology, electronic reporting, throughout our development of those standards, we're going to be thinking about the implications of how that information required by those standards is consumed when developing the standards, to make sure that we're not issuing standards that effectively become obsolete as soon as we actually issue them. So, does that answer your question?
Partially, yes. I think that in principle, yes. I was thinking about these standards which are not under consideration to be changed in the agenda right now, but may potentially be suggested or recommended from this technological review. There are some technologies which are more transformative in nature and have perhaps more radical impact on the underlying regulations or standards or principles, and whether the consideration would be to actually bring this feedback from these more advanced technological solutions back to the standards that are not even considered yet for any changes. So you mentioned a couple of standards that are in line for revisions, but there are some others which may be impacted by the technology, and whether the board would take it up as a potential.
I think Andy can probably.
Just one quick clarification. The European project you're talking about, is that the one that's doing a harmonization of data effort,
yes,
where they're reviewing all the data requirements?
It's broader than that, but yes.
Yeah. So it's just, I'm checking it's the one I've heard of.
They have this ambitious, basically, approach that they
yeah.
want to take, for instance, some new technologies on board, consider distributed ledgers and how do they impact the potential of building this distributed trust. That's a little bit more transformative than just a review of regulations. Hence my question whether the board would consider a similar, more elaborated approach on the revision of the standards, if necessary, if found that this is obviously suitable and in line with the agenda of the IFRSs.
I was just going to say that we're partly covering this afternoon when I talk about the strategy related to technology, because that work is in some way, it doesn't tell me about the consequences or whether the board would embrace or not, but it is designed to set up a process that allows us to track technological developments and assess them for impact, and also have a process in place that allows us to raise that for discussion where necessary. Obviously, whether or not that then leads to anything transformative in standards and so on is a later part of that process, but it's the first steps towards at least being aware of what's going on and that could have an impact.
When the board has currently decided on the agenda for the next 5 years, and that was following an agenda consultation, and what you are saying, we have not heard from participants say, okay, that is your priority, should your priority on the next 5 years. So we have set the agenda, and part of that is better communication, and part what Rachel has presented, but what you are asking was not really kind of focus from our stakeholders saying that what should be work on the next 5 years on.
Thank you.
We're a couple minutes over for this session, but can we take your question?
Just a very quick comment. Financial reporting operates within an ecosystem. Standard setter is one aspect. The filer, the company is another aspect. The auditing profession is another dimension. And so if the set of financial statements have been audited, to say that it is true and fair, and in terms of the way that it is set up, the corresponding appropriate tags are used. That actually brings a very interesting situation regarding some of the discussions that we have. Is it confusing? Is it appropriate when it has been audited to say that it is true and fair? To what extent will then the auditing profession need to do to be at a level where they are competent in terms of working with the client to say which tag need to be used? Is it a case of not using the right tag, or is this a case of the set of accounts are not true and fair? And so I think we seem to need to consider bringing in all the participants within that ecosystem in order to actually move forward. That's my initial view.
Thanks, Rachel. I think that's all the questions we can take. Thanks, Rachel.